All right, good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order. First item of business is roll call of board members, and I would also ask that, this is a hybrid meeting, so individuals are asked to state their name and title before speaking during the meeting, and votes will be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. So our first item is the roll call. My name is Peter Lisi, obviously I'm present. Michael Angelini?
Here.
Lawrence Davis?
Present.
Steve Elbaum?
Present.
Kimberly Kennison? Kimberly? Susan Martin?
Present.
Sarah Sanders? Sarah? And Mark Mahalik?
I'm here.
Thank you, Mark. And just before we start, a hearty welcome back to Sarah, who is rejoining the Chief of Board, so representing the Treasurer's Office. Thank you, Sarah. First item of business is approval of our minutes from our November meeting. As is my custom to request people, I hope that you take a look at the minutes, and I would entertain a motion to accept them.
So a motion?
We have a motion, we have a second. So the motion's out there, and it's been seconded to accept the minutes as presented. Now the time for any discussion, if there is any, or comments, or corrections, any edits. Any changes anyone would like to suggest to the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions?
Mark Verholak.
Mark and Sarah would be abstentions. Thank you. Motion carries. We're moving into the Executive Director's Report, starting with...
Jeanette, go ahead. Yes, thank you, Peter. Wanted to provide an update. I think, as everyone knows, we have a vacancy in the Managing Director for Finance and Operations position. And so we right now have an RFP out for an executive search firm. The responses are due back this week. And I reviewed the existing position description, you know, made some tweaks to it. But the search firm decision will be made next week. And in the meantime, we are also using LinkedIn to see if we can source any candidates. So that is moving along. My goal is to have the position filled sort of late March, early April would be great. And in the meantime, those responsibilities are really being, you know, spread out. Maybe some of these are responsibilities, you know, that people have already had on their plate, and they're just being... I guess you could say, but it's really a group effort. So some things, you know, some things I'm handling. Joanne Makowitz, as the controller, obviously, can handle many of the financial aspects as she already has been doing, and we still have enough to have controls in place in terms of sign-offs and, you know, I'll sign off on things, et cetera. Rob Lake is serving as the new manager of IT and cybersecurity, and he will be working closely with our vendor, our consultant, CT Comp, with regard to moving IT initiatives forward and our continuing internal audit activities. And Rob would report to this new position. So there would still be this additional oversight, big picture view. And then we have others, of course, across the staff who have contributed forward and continue as they always have.
Would be this one. So what is the custom in the search industry that is posted on LinkedIn, this edition is posted on LinkedIn? If we were to find a successful candidate through LinkedIn, would we still owe... From requires their fee. What's the custom or protocol in the search industry?
We were doing it kind of as an interim measure. So we're just in the interim until we decide on to search from or posting it on LinkedIn. If we decide we're going to use a search firm, then we would.
But I mean, if somebody, if Mike knows somebody and says, hey, you got to take a look at this person, if we get the successful
right.
person outside of the search firm, do we still?
Right, I think we could build that scenario into our agreement with them.
Okay.
Because, yes, they didn't source the person, we wouldn't pay them, but on the other hand, you know, we've been working to source
right.
it, and you happen to find somebody.
Right.
So, but I think we can spell that out in the
contract.
So that's, are there any questions? That process or plan? So that is really the primary update that I had.
Did you ask questions? Was it on the CEPA website? Is the position open?
Yeah, we would probably also put it on the website. Visitors to the website are limited, certainly.
Somebody looking at it.
Okay, so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Michael, the next part of the executive director.
For client updates, thank you for that. Yale University, we're pricing Tumi Marketing for them tomorrow for their 2014 and 2017 series of bonds that total over $500 million. Quinnipiac University, they received their zoning approval in November. The construction is formed, so we're moving forward on that. We're seeing that. We expect to price that next month. Livewell Alliance, on January 12th, they closed their fourth advance and the amount of $5 million, just a little over $5 million, the rate at 5.81%. That brings the total advances to just over $31 million of the $81.6 million that authorized. They're working with a number of institutions as far as converting their LIBOR to SOFR in their documents. We're also working with two institutions on their tender dates that will be coming up in 2023, whether to renew. I mean, refinance or get an extension from the bank, so may have some new issues coming up. As you are aware, well, many are aware, maybe Sarah doesn't know, Peter had sent out an email last month stating that the University of Harvard failed to meet their debt service coverage requirement of 1.1 times for fiscal year 2022. It came in at 0.38 times. We hired a long house capital advisors as consultant as required by the bond documents. Consultants engagement will consist of three phases. Phase one, which they're currently in, is an information gathering assessment. It determined the drivers of the financial performance and the failure of the debt service coverage ratio. They received most of the information originally requested from the university. They're waiting on a couple other minor items. They're going to start interviewing team management starting Friday and next week. The consultant noted that the university has been very cooperative and very responsive to all the requests. Second phase will be issuing the report itself, identifying the causes of the failure, and recommendations to cure the covenant for fiscal year 2023. Targeted completion date of the report of March 3rd. And then final phase would be monitoring after the report of fiscal year 2023's performance and compliance and non-compliance with the covenant for fiscal year 2023 and with a target completion date of December 5th. The university hired a separate disclosure counsel. This is with obligation to post filing as required in their obligation under the disclosure agreement for the failure of the meeting of debt service coverage ratio requirement. That was posted today, and then they state the reasons for the failure, one being that at the time they issued the offering document for their Series P issue in June, they were using budget expenses rather than actual year-to-date expenses, and also they certain expenses were excluded, that they were what they call general institution expenses related to restricted funds, and they amount over $10.8 million. So in the When the time, at the time the Series C was offered in June, they were projecting loss from operations of $3.676 million, as opposed to where it should have been, $14.6 million. And also, they have projected debt service coverage ratio, and they offer a document stating it was going to be 1.43 times, when actually, numbers using those figures would have been 0.0. So, like I said, they are working with Monhouse Capital, so we're waiting to see what they come up with in the report. February, or in March. One thing to note that the underwriter, nor the institution that we know of, has received any calls from any investors, because their original report was issued on them back in December, but I think with this filing, disclosure filing, it should help some of investors inquiring about that. And they have not received any correspondence from the rating agency. In the event that S&P comes back and downgrades the university, they're going to have to fund debt service reserve funds on both their NP bonds of $9 million. A waiver from the majority of the investors, but I don't. More on March 3rd. We can make available the posting to the board members if you want.
Well, do they have access to that liquidity?
They do have some access to that liquidity, plus they have additional line of credit available. That's $15 million. They haven't drawn on yet. And given where interest rates are, there shouldn't be too much negative arbitrage.
All right, Mike, and you may not know the answer. I mean, obviously, caused by a downgrade and their ability to access. Do we know that?
Well, it's already in place, so it was already approved, but now that's a good question. We'll have to. That would be allowed.
You know, I mean,
unless maybe they tap it before they get downgraded.
My suspicion is they're probably more likely there's like an MA and a material adverse clause in there than a downgrade. That may prohibit.
Right. You've got the material adverse change clause possible. Have covenant cross defaults.
So, yeah, we can
circle.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just kind of curious. How often are you or Jeanette in contact with the consultant? Have we done our role right now and then we're stepping back, or how?
I'm all here, right? Yeah,
sorry.
Like that. We help identify the consultant. We met with them. You know, we reviewed the reports that they've done for other higher ed, or one report that they've done for another. And at this point, it's really them and the university, but they do keep us updated.
Right, and we built that into the agreement with them, that we would be kept informed. We're not trying to direct the consultant or tell them how to do their work. They're doing their work. If there's an issue, they would be in touch, and then we also have some periodic updates that are.
Those
periodic updates haven't started.
Well, the first one being that they said they've received most of the information that they're conducting the interviews, and they said they would follow up with us after the interview.
That would be the next periodic update, if you will, following up with CUFA after the interview. Any other questions on this? Set it for client updates, Brian?
That's it.
Any else, Michael? Questions? Okay, thank you. Joanne?
Great, thank you very much. For the 11 months, ended November 30th of 2022, year-to-date, net operating income was $1.7 million and $825,000 after program expenses. Our operating revenues are running slightly under budget by $8,000, and our operating expenses are also under budget by $107,000. Our investment income, however, is over budget by $73,000. And in November, the only notable item was the accrual of the client grant for $1 million as approved in November. All I have.
Any questions, Joanne? Wow.
So in 2022, the markets were focused on a couple of different items. They were focused on the situation in Ukraine, as well as on the inflation front, which resulted in a tightening of monetary policy. However, to start the new year, we've seen a slight easing of inflation from the data that's provided so far. On the jobs front, on the wages front, and on consumer prices. This has changed sentiment somewhat in the expectation that the Fed's next move in interest rates for the Federal Reserve rate will only increase by about 25 basis points from the prior 50 basis point hike cycle employed. Additionally, we also have a new potential issue, and that is with regards to the debt ceiling. That could pose some issues if it's not resolved in the near term. The Fed has indicated that they have extraordinary measures which they can impose to the government from defaulting in the next few months. So we'll have to just wait and see what happens with government and what they need to do, Congress, to boost the ceiling, and just how well the Federal Reserve will be able to use their measures in order to keep us from. On the municipal markets, the year started out very slow with regards to new issuance, but this week, despite it being a holiday shortened week, we have a very large new issue calendar. They're expecting $9.1 billion just this week. That's above the five-year average for issuance. we're going to see, of that $9.1 billion, $7 billion of negotiated deals and close to two for competitive-type deals. Page two of the market updates for recent transactions, I mean, it just basically shows that there hasn't really been much issuance. As we would expect for December. We'll definitely have more for next month. The Hopkins transaction, which is listed under education, we had the sale report on at the last meeting.
Have you seen softening in demand? Or is it
I mean, there's been talk that the that's going to be coming this week, they need some resistance in the front end of the curve where the treasury, what do you call it, the ratios of MMG to treasuries is rich. So there's been less demand for paper that's in the 2 to 5 year range. So there could be an adjustment in spreads in that part of the curve. So we'll just have to wait and see. But there had been less buyers of long paper But I think that that, so that part of the curve has cheapened up enough that it's going to attract some interest. But for the most part this week, I think it's anticipated that the front end has a little bit of more aligning to do in order to get to levels where it's going to attract investors' schedule.
And this may affect Yale University because they go out with like 3-year puts. One of their concerns.
Right.
Michael, the floor is yours. The independent school.
All right. You can go to the first slide right there. All right, overall, student demand trends continue to be favorable. We see an increase in applications and increase in enrollment. A little more so for the day schools, especially down in the Greenwich area, Greenwich Day School and Brunswick and Greenwich Academy, also the day school. Balancing some weakening due to the unfavorable investment returns for fiscal year 22. You see the median for the endowment decline over 10%, but overall from up over 33% in 2018. The liquidity metrics declined for both boarding and day schools from the prior year, but they're still as strong as they were 5 years ago. And our portfolio is somewhat leveraged, but not too bad. But when Moody's seems leveraged, but overall that has improved over the past years. And with the strong enrollment and increase in net tuition revenue, and only a marginal increase in tuition discount, operating cash flow margins have been favorable, although it's declined somewhat from last year. Overall, debt service burden is manageable, and resulting in strong debt service coverage ratio. There hasn't been much in the debt issuance recently. The bank direct purchases still continue to be the funding, and refunding to account for over 55%. So our portfolio, looking at got over $682 million, that represents about 8% of our total portfolio. We have 52 bond series outstanding, 31 schools, 21 boarding, and 10 day. I will note that for our analysis on the we only use 20 boarding schools because we do not have Westover School. As you see, 70% are private placement and direct purchases, with just under 30% that are unenhanced public offerings. We do have one bond issue still outstanding, that's bond insured, and that's the 25 issue, about 17.2. Boarding schools, 7 of the 21 schools have their own rating, all rated A or higher. Avon is the newest one to have a rating of A3 with their fiscal 22 issuance. For the most part, yes, they're very highly rated. But in the day schools, only two schools have their own rating, and both highly rated for Greenwich and Hopkins. Brunswick used to be rated A+, but they elected not to keep their rating when they refinanced their 2012 issue last year. Bond issuance from 2019 to year to date, we've issued over $627 million. 39 bond series for 22 schools. We funded 55% bonds issued. We only have one new issue in process. That's for American School for Debt, and we only have one issue this year. And really don't see many independent schools coming forward that we know of for new bond issues. Oh, no, applications, I'm sorry. Overall, for the boarding schools, 15% fiscal 19. Highest level in the past 5 years. Wide range of applications for the individual schools. Marblewood has 112 up to, showed us, 100, some number one increases, include Upper Walker, Choate, and Loomis Chaffey. Day schools, that increased almost 16% from the second highest level. And they have quite a wide range as well, and that is wide with 92 for Washington Montessori School and 787 for that Greenwich Country Day School. There you can see the improvements for Greenwich Country Day, Richfield, and King. Part of Greenwich Country Day School was acquired at Stanwood School, which was our high school. Now they go from pre-K up to high school, and also part of their demographics, where they really benefited, like I said before, with the other Fairfield County schools during the activity. Despite a 15% increase in total applications over the past 5 years, boarding school median increased over 44%, 46% in fiscal 2023. Still, it's not too bad, just a minor increase in relatively stable. The range for selectivity for the schools, 11.4% for the Hotchkiss School, to over 74% for Marblewood. 12 of the 20 schools were more selective in 23 than they were 5 years ago. Day schools, despite their increase over the past 5 years, the median acceptance rate of 58.5% is at its highest level in the past 5 years. And selectively took activity varied from 31.5% for Brunswick and almost 100% for. Eight of the 10 schools were more selective. Boarding schools, they improved theirs, improved slightly over the past 5 years. You see from 9%, ranging from 33%. Marblewood School up to a high of 70% for Choate. And almost half of the schools had an improvement in the yield for the past 5 years. The day school historically has been much higher than the boarding schools, and pretty much around the 74% level for the past 1% 5 years, ranging from a low of 51.4% for the King School, very impressive, 91.4% school, and schools improving the matriculation. Right, for enrollment. Total enrollment has increased for the past 5 years. Starting just only a 1.1% increase from fiscal year 2019. That's kind of the highest level in the past 5 years. You can see there we built up the boarding schools for their boarding component and also the day component. Boarding components up almost 1% over the past 5 years, and day student component 5% over the. Looking at the international population for the boarding schools, they pretty much flat, about 19%. While Connecticut was in at 3.6% to 37%. The day enrollment steadily increased in each of the past 5 years. 8 of the 10 schools increased enrollment. My day school, that's up 12%, and also one school, that's up 12%. Looking at their liquidity metrics for total cash investments to debt. Being steadily increased from 3.6 times in 18 to 4.7 times in 21, before significantly declining in the fiscal year by 19%. Despite the decline, 18 of the schools have above a 2.0 times coverage, which is good compared to 5 schools in 18. We only had 3 schools that were above Moody's 2021 median, which is right there. It's historically been the case that we've been lower than Moody's rated credits. Grade school, also just, the ratio also just climbed from the prior year, but not as significant. Remains slightly lower than it was 5 years ago. 7 of the 10 schools that have over tax coverage, 3 exceeding Moody's. One institution to note is Hopkins, which has highest coverage among the, all the independent schools for the past 5 years. That's in 22 at 19.7 times. But with their new addition of, of debt they issued the last year, that's going to drop to around 8 times, but still very, very. Looking at the next slide for total cash and investments to operations. Position for operations, not as strong as the cushion for debt, for the boarding schools, but it increased 13.5% from the second highest level of, over the past. Here we have 14 schools at least 2 times coverage, 3 at above the Moody's median, and the range for the schools sometimes performance school up to 8.4. The day school median remained relatively flat, averaging about 1.5 for the past 5 years. Looking at the boarding school on the map, 3 schools at least times coverage, but we have 3 schools that have less than 1 range from 0.5 times for Webster up to 5.2 times. Right. Net tuition revenue growth, as I mentioned before, the tuition discount lately over the past 5 years, ranging from 14.2% for Indian Mountain School to over 39% for Ethel Walker. But like overall, it's been relatively flat. You can see here for net tuition revenue growth above 5%, we had 19 schools that have broken 5% in the prior year. That 19 institutions make up 80% boarding schools that have the greater than 5% and 3 of the day schools that have greater than 5%. We have 5 schools reporting a decline in tuition revenue growth.
Is that something that you've seen before where demand increases so much that essentially the price goes up.
Right. Well, and because
the demand tuition, is through the roof, right?
And the tuition discount,
right,
is the same or a little higher, so it's really the increase. I think a lot of them held their prices for 2021.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much the ability. A good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I guess it's basic, it's Econ 101, right?
If you're parent paying.
That's a bad thing.
If you're head of school, it's a great thing.
It's remarkable.
Was price inelastic?
Yes.
No, that's the universal.
The closer to... I guess the closer you get to Greenwich, the greater the inelasticity of demand.
Right,
I would
expect
that.
Yes, I guess we can go on. No, we can go on. I just wanted to point that out. That was very unusual. I don't think we've ever had that many. With that net tuition revenue growth, the EBITDA margin and operating cash flow margins, they're still strong, but slightly lower than last year. We had a range from 3.9% for Eagle Hill all the way up to 29% for Choate. Schools that passed Moody's 1 million. Total improvements include the Marwood School, going from 0.8%, 18.5%, and the Canterbury. The day schools, the improvement in the median, and it's at the second highest level in the last 5 years. Any of the schools that have or greater than Moody's range for the day school savage is from 8.9% to Winston Prep to 23.8%. And with the next slide, with the strong dividend margins, the debt service ratio was favorable. And overall median decline, but for the boarding schools decreased prior year high, but increased over the past 5 years. High schools at buy-in ratio since year 2018. So we have 18 of the schools that have more than 2 points. And 6 of the schools have a and the median for the day school is favorable. Four times, also at the second highest level. Range from 2.4 times up to 6.5. But that's fine with their additional debt. We have three schools that were higher than police. For debt to capitalization, I mentioned leverage. More or less, we're leveraged in Moody's median, but overall, not too bad. They mentioned improvement. You see the high schools there in blue, leveraged to 8% leveraged. Only had 2 schools that were below. Ranged from a high of 5% for Hotchkiss to a high of 37.2 for Marwood School. And the day student, day schools, the median increased slightly over the past 5 years, ranged 4.3% for Hopkins up to Hampden Hall. These schools were lower levers than. And the final slide, capital spending is back at the fiscal year 2022. 6% of the institution invested more in the PPE. Significantly higher than what was in one. Mainly at 60%, mainly boarding schools, 70% of the boarding schools. More than the and you can see the median capital spending increased 13%. 2018 and it's at its highest level in the past years. Median capital spending increased 35% for the boarding and over 127% for the. So that's pretty much it. The pandemic had an effect in 2021 with a lot of that was pretty much all around, in all sectors. Overall, I think fairly well. We were talking about before. It seems like always the case. Rich get richer and the poor get poorer. But they're surviving.
Questions, Michael?
Oh, and I also want to thank Ms. Christy Johnson. Her work on that.
You did a great job putting charts together,
Mike. Yes, I'm supposed to.
Yeah. Well done. Lauren, do you have a question?
I just want to go back to the liquidity ratio in terms of getting to say, it looks, I take it that that ratio was just reflective of just the market.
Especially 2022?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Stoddard, a very interesting presentation. Mike, say Richard, Richard. Okay. Anything else for Michael? No? Okay, we, prior to the board meeting, we had a grant committee meeting.
Yeah.
Lawrence, would you like to report out?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Peter. So the grant committee met prior to the board meeting to allocate and make decisions as to targeted grant program awards. And you know, the targeted grant program is geared towards meeting needs on a statewide basis. The chosen focus for this targeted grant program was health equity. We had 15 LOIs that were received, and an internal review committee boiled that down to 10 applicants that we had reviewed. You know, of the 10 applicants, there was $2.2 million that was requested in funding. We had $1,038,551 available to allocate, and we made decisions as to six recipients that were provided funding. And just so you know, there were three of those recipients that received full funding, and the first was St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center for expansion of the community health workers support in the emergency department. They had requested under a two-year program $250,000. We also had the Connecticut Children's Medical Center, which had an equitable start to nutritional and development of health care, two-year statewide program that received $250,000. And then the Connecticut Breastfeeding Coalition for lactation training and support by and for historical marginalized people in Connecticut. Again, a two-year program. They had requested a full $118,000 that was given, granted to them. There was an additional $551 that was left over. Their full amount was $118,551. I'm sorry, they requested $218,000.
Requested $218,000.
Yes, yes, I forgot to be cut down $100,000 off of that.
Right.
Thanks, Peter. And so as Peter sort of led into is that, you know, in terms of making the decisions, we did cut back on the rest of the applicants, lowering their request by $110,000 each to amounts of $140,000 respectively, all of them. And the recipients, the last three were the Community Health Center Association of Connecticut. Their program is a systemic, systemically health disparities at federally qualified health centers. The Connecticut Council for Family Service Agencies, Inc., that provides screenings for Connecticut youth and outreach and education that improves access and equity. And the last was the Connecticut Junior Republic, which is a extension of services to provide behavioral health equity for children. That was the amount that were granted under the targeted grant program. The committee also met and talked about, you know, do we have to vote on that?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, Peter, you know,
I'd be happy to make a motion. To accept the grant committee's recommendation on the targeted grant program awards, as described by Lawrence, two awards at $250,000, three awards at $140,000, and the best award at $118,000 $500. So I would make a motion to accept the committee's recommendation.
All those in favor?
Well done.
Thank you.
Sorry?
People on the.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is Mark Verhoek. I'm okay.
Sarah, were you a yes on the grant committee's recommendation?
I hear her, right. She gave a thumbs up.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Note that in the minutes.
You got a thumbs up? Thank you, Lawrence. And Betty, again, thank you for your work on this and review committee.
Okay.
Yes.
There are, you know, two items also that the committee discussed. You know, we've had brief discussion about Pride Capital, which followed up on meetings that we have with Angela there. And as the Pride Enterprise Capital is in the long term doing in terms of investments and profits that would be catalytic in terms of outcome that is designed. And, you know, I will ask Betty to just speak briefly on that, and I will our last.
Sure. This is the enterprise capital area is something that we're looking at potentially as a resource to support organizations' bottom line. It's a different type of funding than regular grant funding, and there are two potential ideas of organizations that have come to us in the past, and we've been working with on health equity funds. And they're not at a point where we are ready to go forward with any type of a full request because they're still getting us information. We expect in February at the May 2023 board meeting, we'll expect to bring additional information about this potential. And if we go forward with Enterprise Capital or if we decide to actually go forward with the typical targeted grant making.
And the last subject matter that we covered was the form that is the date has not been to take, but we're looking and you know, speaking with Jack Van de Pogue, and the subject matter would cover youth and adolescent health. I don't know if
Betty. Yeah, many of the board members have come to our yearly nonprofit forum where we invite grant applicants and clients to come to a meeting where we have an expert keynote speaker and sometimes a panel on an issue of importance in the state of Connecticut. Last year we did a forum on health equity, and this year, as Lawrence mentioned, we're looking at the potential for doing adolescent and youth behavioral mental health.
That's all that we have.
I would just encourage, as soon as the date is identified, to get out to the board, because the forum last year was terrific. All on a client forum on diversity equity, very, very interesting. Always can get some great speakers. So, if you know the date, let us know. So, hopefully, everyone.
Yeah, we're looking at end of April, but still have to come.
All right. Anything else for Lawrence regarding the grant committee business? Is there any other business anyone would like to bring forward? The good of the cause.
Yes, Peter. Starting on page 77, is the ethics and conflict of interest policies, and there's two forms that need to be completed by members by February 3rd, if possible. They can be completed electronically or mailed in. And there's some paper versions here if you want to.
By February 3rd, guys. Electronic submission, okay. Anything else? Any other business? done. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you all very much. We are adjourned.